There is, we have data on that, and we are improving the questions that we're asking about that so that then we can improve the data that we get about that, right? Because I think as good teachers, scientists, and professors, you know that the quality of the answers is dependent on the quality of a better question, right? So there's some things that we have there, and some of those things were used in the strategic plan. If you go to the plan, you can see some of those things. In some things, we need to drill a bit more. And at the end of the day, what you want is to be able to use the best information you have to make decisions of things that can be either addressed here. There might be things that we can address with our community college partners who are sending the students before, right? But you only need that if you have that kind of information. So we have that. If you have more specific things in mind, feel free to send me an email, and I'll do the best I can to respond to that. Yes?
Kevin Ferguson, Department of English. I had a contract question.
Can you use the mic, so to the benefit of?
Because it's contract. Kevin Ferguson, Department of English. A contract question. We received an email from CUNY Central saying that the new contract salaries would go in effect in 2016. But you said earlier it sounded like it wasn't going to be until the next year with the retroactive pay as well. Have you heard something more specific from CUNY that we won't start the new, we won't get the raises until next year?
The information I have, and I'll double check, is that the bonus will be paid on October and that the retro and the other payment will be done in January. So I'll double check, right, that we have the same communication, and that is not also that the language that you got was in the academic year 2016, which would include the spring of 2017. No, you know, and you're an English professor, language matters. So let me just get you the correct info, and I'll share it with Manny so he can share it with the body. Okay, thank you.
I just wanted
I'm
sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to ask a question about the registration data for fall of 16 as compared to fall of 15, in particular, undergraduate and also graduate.
Okay, so a couple of things. We have about 150 more students this fall than we had last fall. Our enrollment target was, I think we missed the target by 8 students, so we're basically flat. Richard, feel free to, send me a rescue line here. We can send the chart to Manny to share with the Senate that it breaks down the categories by new students, continuing students, undergrad, grad, and you can see I didn't bring it with me, the comparison. My general sense is that in terms of the enrollment targets, we were ahead on the undergraduates. We were shorter in the graduate by about 100. 70, okay. In the undergrad, which is a pattern that was shown all across CUNY this year, we had less new students that we had anticipated by a little bit, but that was a pattern that was sort of across CUNY. So we made up on the continuing students. Is that what you were asking me?
Yeah, well, that's basically it.
Okay.
You gave the answer. Well, I wanted to know what you think is the reason for the percentage of transfer students increasing from what it used to be, which was around 55%. That's what I remember anyway, up to 67%.
Well, I mean, actually, that would be a very interesting historical question, and actually maybe some of the faculty who have been here longer would be in a better position than I am to respond to that. I mean, what we're experiencing is not something that has been unique to us. In many of the senior colleges, there are a predominantly transfer institution, and the range can go from 70 to 55, but that 60% seems right for the system. So I don't have a sense of that chart, but I think that'd be an interesting conversation to see. There is also nationally less first-time, full-time freshmen. That's a national trend. So, But in terms of the actual numbers, I'll send Manny the chart, and then you can have the real numbers.
No, I appreciate the estimates, and that's all I wanted. It seems, though, that more and more students are choosing to go to community college upon graduating from high school than to going to a four-year college.
Well, I mean, remember, there's a couple of things. One is some students, due to remediation, do not really have an alternative, right? They need to begin there if they have some remedial work to be done. The other thing that we need to remember, given the student body that we have, is that, you know, the differential between a community college and us is about $2,000 every year. Right. So, for example, when you talk to students, and this is I've done with our alumni in the past, who would tell you, I went to Queens because I couldn't afford anything else. Maybe at that time there were no community colleges. If they had existed, they probably would have gone there, saved some money, and then transfer. So I think that you have that. And I also believe that we're also dealing with a lot more of a mobile student population than we were used in the past. Students, in this sense, as consumers of education, if you wish, are moving and looking at different choices in ways that we're only beginning to adapt to. And that'd be my best take to your question.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Alan, yes.
Alan Ludman, Earth and Environmental Sciences and College at Large Senator. That information that two-thirds of the student body is transferring in is fascinating in terms of academic planning for department chairs and for the college as a whole, because if people are coming in with their general education requirements completed, the number of general education courses we have to offer decreases, the number of enrollments in what used to be big box, very large enrollment classes decreases, and the whole college has to take a look at this. Is someone analyzing those trends and how we have to adjust to them?
Yes, and also, it's part of what we also hope to have more conversations, more nuanced ones with our community college partners to be able to provide better advice about, for example, you know, and one of the things that gets complicated in the transfer scene, right? University of California system, you need the associates to transfer. Here we get students that have 30, 45, you know, a whole range of credits, which makes it very difficult for us to be able to adequately, you know, sort of connect with them. So, and if Pathways also created a mindset that encouraged to move as fast as you could to the four-year college, right? We might need to be partnering and having better conversations with our partners there saying, based on what we see, you know, could your advisors be recommending that these courses, right, be taken here because they're going to run into bottleneck issues when they come to our school. So, you know, I my sense, right, and you've been here longer than I have, so I speak with the authority that 3 years gives me too, is that as a whole, most of the four-year schools of the system have continued to operate the mindset that we are predominantly first-time, you know, freshmen, right, and that most of our structures are geared that way, and that we need to begin to make some kind of a pivot to deal with this that would speak to the kinds of things that you're alluding to.
Yes, my name is Beatriz Carolina Peña. I'm from Hispanic Languages and Literatures, and I'm just starting to be the advisor for graduate students in my department. And what I've noticed is the number of students have been dwindling in the MA master's program, reducing. And one of the reasons is that about 4 years ago, the Board of Education stopped hiring new teachers. That's one of the problems. But I would like to know what the college could do to support the program so that it could grow and recruit the new students. Any type of promotion, for example? Where should I go for that?
Well, I will talk to your dean, right? And remember that in a time, this is kind of a chicken and egg kind of question, right? We need to make some investments so that they can support the programs that we have. When you have budget tightness, right? Every dollar that goes into support X is money that is being taken away from some other things. So we need to have, and this is why the inventory that the provost office is taking about our graduate programs and where the enrollments are will be very helpful to allow us to make some strategic investments on some of the programs that we think have the best chance of succeeding if there was, you know, and the teaching thing is also cyclical, right? You wake up one morning and nobody wants to be a teacher. And then you wake up 3 years later and we need teachers, you know. And for us, I think in part, diversifying more our portfolio of graduate programs would be better for the overall health of the university. And that takes time. That is not easy. But right now we have the DOE talking to us about a whole range of programs because they feel there's shortages in some areas too. So, but I will begin concretely to talk to your dean about that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name
Sorry, Manny, I didn't know that I was going to cause such an impact.
So much interest, but
it's okay.
My name is Renee Weiss with the Department of Accounting and Information Systems. And I'm only starting my eighth year, so forgive me, I don't have the world of knowledge about this issue, but with respect to the significant population of transfer students coming in and hardships they do face in adjusting to a new environment, we talk about providing more support for those students. What I also observe is an issue that they have, and I don't know whether how the college could address this, is those students who are coming in with TAP awards are pressured to immediately declare their major, and I imagine they must anyway, because I'm also a faculty advisor, and they're coming in at the start of the semester or summer to declare their majors. Most of these students already have more than 60 credits. They're coming in with 70 plus, and they're electing a major in accounting that's a 63 credit major. Very few courses are transferred into our department, and so then these students, with this incentive from TAP for the major declaration, and to have certain course credits, they're now faced with taking all the more difficult accounting courses. They're cramming them into one semester, and we're seeing poor performance. And what I also see, and I don't know if my colleagues see this, is that some students just disappear. They're still registered in the course. They don't want to withdraw because they'll lose their financial award, aid award, and they just come in for a perfunctory midterm final because they also don't want a WU, and they fail. And I don't know that there's any follow-up to find these students and proactively work with them before they failed. And also, is there anything that CUNY can do in terms of these rigorous impositions with respect to financial aid that don't necessarily help them perform?
You've made a couple of excellent points there, so let me take a few, and thank you for that observation. One is that, and it's actually one of the things, last year the governor gave some money, so this performance in improvement fund, right, that was sort of competed in CUNY, and one of the grants that we asked and we got was called We Want You Back, and we worked with a lot of students that had disappeared, and we brought some back, and BP Alvarez has been working on some of the data as to what do we learn from that can help us prevent them from disappearing, right? So we got some information on that, you know, might not be particular to the accounting department, but in general, which was valuable. I think that those are the kinds of nuanced, both qualitative and then quantitative data that we need to bring in to improve what we do here, to try to improve what the advisement and the information that they get in the community colleges when they come better. But you hit on the other point too. the structures of financial aid or that are also modeled around first-time food, they're like iPads, right? Probably TAP has not caught up with things like that. If we had good information, it'd be on us to then lobby the state to be able to create a kind of flexibility that would allow us to then, you know, serve better students like that. So thank you for that observation. And, you know, and that is particular, I mean, it's valuable all over, right? But also in majors that have the volume that you have in yours, I mean, that also becomes an added complication that plays out differently in majors that are smaller. Yep. Thank you.
Hello. Elena Frangakis-Siret, Senator at Large, Social Sciences. Thank you for an inspirational presentation. Actually, my colleague, Renee Weiss, I think, it did point a lot of things that I was finding in the summer. And I'm history, so it's not exactly accounting, an area where the foreign students and transfer students would come to. But there are, I think, problems with sorting them out, and I would suggest that there is a better structure and coordination and information to departments between not just academic advisement, which does a great job, but also transfer office and international students office. And there is a distinction between those who come from within CUNY, who are a lot, and they have courses that are more easily transferable and recognizable. Those who come from the United States, because I've come across a number of students who come from the South, the American South, and they're completely lost. They could easily be coming from Sweden, they're as lost. And it's not obvious what they're supposed to do. And in the summer, I didn't know what office to go to ask, to email to. And thirdly, the growing number, which I think is global, the issues of Chinese students we get, and in particular, it seems, who also have completely different knowledge of course, and course descriptions. So there has to be knowledge on campus as to what office does what, and then for the offices to work together and with the departments. Because the students end up going from office to office, collecting signatures that doesn't work, plus they sometimes do the same course twice, and or happens, you know, they take a course that they really don't want to. So I would suggest that. And also I would congratulate the people involved that we got more students this year. This is a great achievement because every single student counts. So that's wonderful. And if I may get not too excited, however excited somewhat, you said that we had more research as for the faculty.
We're trying to find additional funding for research faculty, but that, you know, don't get overexcited.
Okay.
Let me do some math, right? So
excited. I should.
The provost and I are trying to work on something to get you really excited, but give us time.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
And thank you for your feedback too. And you know, for some of those things too, BP Alvarez will be a point person if you have need information for some things. Thank you.
Charisse Evans, chemistry. The two colleagues that just spoke. I'm the chemistry department's collector of numbers. So what you should do if you're trying to sort students, what we have found is look at where they transferred from. So chemistry, and this is tedious, it would help to have a query. I do this by hand. But what chemistry has seen is we have four major transfer schools, Queensboro, LaGuardia, Nassau, Borough of Manhattan Community College. Of those, Queensboro is the most successful, then LaGuardia, Nassau, and the Borough of Manhattan Community College is not successful at all in chemistry. Chemistry is going to have to decide, in fact, whether to accept BMCC transfer chemistry courses at all, because it doesn't, 0% pass rate in the next course is not success. But what we have discovered in these numbers is we actually have two gateway courses, and this touches on what Alan was saying. General Chemistry 1, gateway course, freshmen take it. Organic one, gateway course, that's what all the transfer students start. That's why at Queens College, unlike most schools in the nation, our pass-fail rate in organic is 50%. Should be around 30%. And that difference in percentage is solely due to transfer students. If I pull them out, our pass rate goes to, our fail rate is 50%. If I pull the transfer students out, our fail rate goes to about 25% for organic one. So we need to keep in mind that as we move to understanding transfer courses, this is important, and it's important to acknowledge where the students come from. Some of them come from well-prepared departments, and some of them don't. And if you begin to look at it that way, you can actually begin to see which students you need to support more than others.
And I think that that's where the information and basing decisions on the right level of information is, you know, entirely appropriate. This is why I also know that from the Division of Math and Natural Science, there was a proposal that went to the Department of Education with the Title V HSI grant that talked about also increasing the curricular collaboration between the departments here in the sciences and there, so that hopefully that conversation leads to some changes there too and some changes here that allow us to be better prepared to do that. But thank you for the very granular assessment. So. You want to say something about that, Betsy, or should I take the next? Can you give me?
Vice President Alvarez is prompting me to mention the EAB Student Success Collaborative. This is an initiative that CUNY has subscribed to. It's a suite of predictive analytics, which will give both faculty and students, I think, better capability of understanding chances of succeeding, allow us to identify, as you say, where there may be students who need additional support. That contract's in the process of being signed. We will have a team to work with CUNY on and with EAB, which is the Education Advisory Board, to implement it. And sometime next spring, that should be available. And it will also, I think, be helpful to students in evaluating alternative paths mm-hmm. open to them. So we're hopeful that will, again, as the President said, help us to better use the data that we have in ways that better support students.
Thank you. And a last one, because I'm getting signs here from the Senate saying, you know, you were second and you're taking all the time.
Two questions. First one being that we as student association, what can we do to improve the relationship between students and faculty? And then you want me to tell you the second one as well?
Yes.
Okay. The second one, I hope I can word this properly. So in the process of admissions, does ethnicity play a part when we're admitting students to Queens College? And will the school be able to provide SA or just maybe, I don't know, make if this is public or not, of statistics of like what ethnicities we have and what's the percentage?
Well, we have ethnicity and race are categories that students provide information should they want to, right? So the information that we have when a student registers to CUNY First, right, is whatever the student wants to provide. And this also holds true for faculty, and nobody is obliged to provide that information if they don't want. So the data that we have on all the categories is always gonna have missing information, right? And it's also things that you can change, that you can, you know, go into CUNY First and not answer now and then answer later. That information is public and we can make it available to the student government without any issue. And as a public institution, we do not discriminate by race and ethnicity on anything, much less on admissions criteria, going back to your first question. Does that answer? You're giving me body language in my class that I didn't quite answer your question. So I want to make sure, if I remember my teaching days.
The first one was just that, what can SA do?
Oh, that's right. You're absolutely right. My experience in my 2 years here is that we have a very vocal and robust and serious, student association that our faculty respect. In my engagement with the deans, with the chairs, I've always seen a lot of collaboration there. So I would begin in talking with the provost office as sort of the leader of the faculty, and then with some of the deans, and take it from there. But my other sense is also that the faculty here are very open to things that might be student concerns. Is that what you were looking for? Okay. So thank you so very much, and back to you.
Okay.
Sorry. I didn't want to.
Okay, let's go back to item 3A, the memorial for Professor George Axelrod. That'll be presented by Professor Robert Engel.
Thank you. It's my sad duty to report to this body of the passing of a friend and colleague of almost half a century. Professor Emeritus George Axelrod passed away late last March after a battle with cancer. I first met George in February of 1968 when I came here to interview for a position, and then in the fall when I joined the faculty as assistant professor, he was my mentor for being a junior faculty member. George was born into a Jewish family in what is now the Czech Republic, and his early years were lived in and around Prague, such that when the Nazi invasion came, being a healthy young boy, he was sent to work camps, from which he regularly escaped. Unfortunately, he was regularly recaptured and sent usually to a new camp. On his eighth escape, which was from Auschwitz, he managed to hide out in a local Catholic church for some time, and thereby became the first and probably the last Jewish altar boy to serve in that church. He was eventually found out and escaped, but he was shot by local Nazi sympathizers in the left leg, a wound which plagued him the rest of his life, although he covered it very nicely, you wouldn't notice it. He also lost an eye in that process. He was sent to a work camp in Hungary. When liberation came, he was reunited with his parents, amazingly. And a year later, they obtained a visa to come to New York, where within 2 years, he not only mastered the English language, but graduated from high school. He then went off to CCNY, majoring in chemistry, graduated in 4 years, and then went off to the University of Kansas, got his PhD with Calvin Vanderwerf, after which he went to Ohio State and did a postdoc with Mel Newman, for which there are other connections to Queens College. In 1960, he joined the faculty of Brooklyn College, and then the following year, obtained an assistant professorship at Queens College, where he spent the rest of his career, including 3 terms as chair of the Department of Chemistry. I had the pleasure of collaborating with George on 2 research projects over the years. One, his work in synthesizing a new type of aromatic system known as boropenes, as well as a new method for the direct formation of vinyl carbon to phosphorus bonds. In addition to his other activities around the campus, he was particularly active in initiating the Queens College chapter of Sigma Xi, the National Scientific Research Society. And after his retirement in 2000, he gave particular attention to that service, particularly assisting with the undergraduate research symposium. He was very active in organizing this, not only doing the multitude of usual chores with the paperwork, but also literally the heavy lifting. And I know this because George and I would rearrange the furniture in SB in order to make that happen every year. He constantly worked to advance the students of Queens College, and he had an attitude of tough love, which students came to appreciate after they left their undergraduate years. He survived by his wife, Beatty, of 53 years, two daughters, two grandchildren, and he will be sorely missed. A memorial fund for Professor Axelrad has been established through the Alumni Office at Queens College. Donations to the fund will be used to support undergraduate and master's level students in the performance of their research and the presentation of their research. And donations should be made through the Queens College Alumni Office. Contact Maureen Kennedy. Thank you.
I would ask the Senate to rise for a moment of silence. Thank you very much. Let's go back to the agenda. There are no special motions, so that brings us to committee reports, item 5A, Undergraduate Curriculum Committee.
I'd like to move the minutes of the May 5th, 2016 Undergraduate Curriculum Committee, noting in particular that item one on page one, which is from the School of Earth and Environmental Sciences, is withdrawn. That item was already passed and has managed to get on the minutes again, so that item is withdrawn. Move unanimous consent.
Any objections to unanimous consent? Okay, seeing none then, motion passes.
Might I say to the Senate that the curriculum committee has some open seats. There's an open faculty seat from the Arts and Humanities Division, and right now there are no students on the undergraduate curriculum committee. We have five vacant seats. So I encourage the students to please go to the nominating committee website and sign up to be on the undergraduate curriculum committee.
Okay, next item in the agenda, 5B, nominating committee.
Sarah Wolf on behalf of Marion Fish, who would request that the slate as presented be accepted with unanimous consent.
Any objections to unanimous consent? Okay, seeing none, motion passes. Next item, 5C, Graduate Curriculum Committee report. Please note this is dated September 15th, 2016.
Thank you, this is Steve Schwartz, Associate Provost. Our thanks to Manny and the Executive Committee for expediting this proposal. It's been in the hopper for some time, but was passed yesterday by the GCC. And by expediting this, this course can be offered in the spring to a current cohort, a new cohort in an exciting sabbatical program. So I ask for unanimous consent on the minutes of September 14th.
Any objections to unanimous consent? Okay, seeing none, motion passes.
May I also echo Ken, there are no graduate students on the GCC. There haven't been in some time, but if you know of interested students, please recommend them to us.
There is no old business, new business. Item 7A, elections to the Executive Committee. 7A is Executive Committee.
Yes, I'd like to nominate Edmund Leitis.
Leslie, I think it's different up here. So let's do let's do 7A first, which is the Executive Committee. We have it backwards. You think in 2+ years I'd learn how to do things correctly. Well, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. I'd like to nominate Roberta Brody and Christopher Wagner. Do I need to do that separately? Roberta Brody?
Yes, okay.
Okay.
So, Elections Executive Committee, Roberta Brody and Christopher Wagner. There are two open seats, so are there any further nominations from the floor? This can only be done from the floor. Further nominations? Okay, seeing none, Secretary will cast one vote for Professors Brody and Wagner. Our next item then is the University Faculty Senate. And Leslie, if you could do that. On this one, I know you're going to be disappointed, students, but this is only faculty can vote on this and only faculty can nominate. And this again has to be done from the floor.
Yes, Edmund Leitis for this one.
Any further faculty nominations from faculty for Edmund Leitis? I'm glad you asked me that. This seems to be, we finally have a full contingent to the University Faculty Senate. But I don't want to get too cocky because it's been like whack-a-mole. The minute you hit one mole, another opening comes up. Our next meeting for the UFS is the 20th of September next week. And I'm going to go there and I'm going to say proudly, Queens College has a full contingent. And then Bill will say, the executive director, oh no, you're missing two people. But as of now, yes, full contingent. So if there are no further nominations, Secretary will cast one vote for Edmund Leitis for UFS.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, thank you very much.
First meeting? Oh, you did it again.
Hey. Oh, okay. I felt like Jerry Lee Lewis here working.
Get it. All right, see you later.
Before you leave, make sure you give Phyllis your QC email address. We want to make sure we have that. Even though we do the Gmail, make sure she has your...
Okay? Well, let me help her out here.
Okay.
I was never on that, but it's...
No, go ahead.